Hey, welcome to another episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. You know what time it is, kids, all together now. Let's go up the down staircase in the outdoor, make sense out of the senseless, and if it's all possible to do, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. That little interlude music there, that's Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap by AC/DC. And while I have a very eclectic sense of music and appreciation for all different types of music, there's just something about that very visceral for me, and it kind of gets my mind going in the direction hopefully that produces some audio excellence that enhances your life in some way, shape, or form. The other song that's like that for me is Iron Man by Black Sabbath. Go figure, right? Get me around some Black Sabbath and AC/DC. Kind of turn into a different creature, if you get my drift. Anyway, glad to have you joining me from anywhere and everywhere around the planet. A little bit of a risk doing this show today on a couple levels. First level is my voice has been doing its own thing without my permission for the last couple days. You know, I spend a lot of time in audio production. I'm working on an audiobook with someone right now, and my job is really to coach them. I'm not reading it, so I work remote, and as they're doing their thing, I'm on my end doing my engineering part of this, and I can tell where people are at by how their voices are. So many shows over the years, I used to kid my guests, you know, when I was on back in Michigan, you know, well over 20 plus years ago, I could kind of tell what they were wearing, what they had for breakfast, how much sleep they had, what kind of mood they were in by their voice. And Henry Wadsworth Longfellow said that the human voice is the organ of the soul. And I think he was onto something there, because it's very revealing where you're at. You know, if you're tired, you can tell. But anyway, when the weather changes, and I don't mean to gross anybody out here, but I'm a plain spaking fella. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to say it as I call it. If I could bottle phlegm, if I could somehow monetize the post-nasal drip that become, and the older I've gotten, the more prevalent that's gotten. So it changes my voice depending on the weather. And it's early Saturday morning here in Chicago. It's pretty decent actually for this time of December, but it's damp and it's chilly. And last night it was warm. And then, you know, so these variations in here. And then along with, you know, how my studio is dry or whatever like that, it changes things. And of course, if I haven't had enough water, which I probably haven't yet, hang on a minute. Let's do something about that. Hold on, por favor. I keep a gallon of water nearby. Oh, it sounds a little bit better already. But anyway, I keep a lot of water nearby because you have to be hydrated. And sometimes I forget that. Coffee is a dehydrator. Water is a hydrator, so it's kind of equal amounts of both, and this is what you get. The other risk, and I'm just having fun with this today, the other risk is that for anybody who's read my books, and I, you know, to this day, I'm still floored when I hear from people around the planet, literally, that have picked up a copy of either Uncommon Life or Every Moment Matters or Phenomenon, and have something to say about how the book has affected them. I got an email this morning from a reader who was in chapter 11 of Phenomenon, where I was talking about a lot of different things that were going on that I can't explain. And I like to think of life that way, as a great mystery. And she was sharing some of the things that had gone on in her life. And she said, it's like your book has given me permission to talk about stuff that I never told anybody. That's, as a writer and as an author, that's a pretty good compliment. So anyway, in all of that, when I think of how my life is now and the professional trajectory that I've been on for, as I mentioned, 25 years or so, the people who knew me before all this, they're kind of effing floored sometimes, as I am at times, because there's just a part of this, not so much that I want to pinch myself and wake up. I just don't know how exactly it happened. It's better off that I don't. I just keep showing up and doing my thing, and that it keeps expanding, apparently. And sometimes it contracts, but most of the time it's just expanding. And so when I get around, as I mentioned, people that knew me before all of this, The questions are fast and furious, and the inquiry is often intense. And they don't remember me as the guy that I am today. And I think that's what evolution is to a greater or lesser degree. That you, if you play your cards right and you follow the connected dots and, you know, eat the Reese's Pieces like E.T., follow them home, you can change your life on a lot of levels. And I know that's kind of what's happened to me over time. The events of my life and the incidences and the accidents and the people and the places and the things and all the coagulation of my life experience has pushed me in a direction, sometimes begrudgingly, but a lot of times like, well, let's go see what's going on over here. And I found that it worked for me, and it still does. And I'm coming up on the age, I'll be 63 at the end of this month. I'm coming up to where, I mean, I have friends that have retired already, and I can't even imagine what I would retire from. I love doing what I do. I love writing. I love doing this podcast. I really enjoy doing radio. If speaking ever comes back, meaning I can get out in front of people again, I love doing that. I love coaching people to get their product out and do the things that they want to do in the world. So I have all these myriad of platforms that I have been trained for and trained myself for, sometimes without even realizing it. I spent a whole year on the air this past year from September 20 to September 21 doing a daily radio show with Beijing, China. I learned a ton. The big lesson, which was just reinforced but not relearned, was that we're all basically the same. The folks that I spent time with on a daily basis there, Hu Young and Beibei, they were more professional than most people I've worked with here in the States in radio. But when that ended, it's like, well, now what? Well, the good thing was I had a nice break. I took about a month and a half off and didn't really do much except catch up on my sleep and get back to the gym more regularly and all the little things that I hadn't been doing before. Clean my studio. And sometimes it looks like a deli in here. You know, I spend an inordinate amount of hours at my desk and all my equipment laying around and stuff. And I tend to eat here. Sometimes I sleep here. I'll kick my feet up and that's it. But got all that cleared up. And then all of a sudden the projects start floating back. And there is something satisfying when you work at something for a long time and you no longer have to chase projects that they just kind of float up. And I think that's like the reciprocal effect of doing what you're supposed to do, you know. And when the phone rings, and it still rings, I actually got a new phone, which is a whole other podcast. What a pain in the ass that is. Life was so much simpler when Amazon was just a river, spam was just meat in a can, and the phone ringer was just one on the wall. I don't give a shit what anybody says about how great technology is. When I see cameras shoved in telephones, it's not a phone, it's a camera. Back when I was a kid, they were two separate things there. Anyway, it's neat when that happens. And so I get to kind of pick and choose the projects that I want to be involved in. And that is great satisfaction. I often think of my dad who did not have that opportunity, but his life was different back in the day. He was a banker and, you know, went to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And that was the end of it. Did the same thing day after day for 35 years or more. And always wanted to be an architect, and he never had that chance. He never had that come to him. So I feel prepared to do this work. And I got to tell you, a huge part, I mean an enormous part, if I would consider myself successful in the field that's I've chosen and that I believe has chosen me in media, you know, I mean, if you look on, if you read, I don't even have a Wikipedia. Don't want one, don't need one, don't care about it. But if you look at, and when people introduce me at talks and such, they read my bio. It sounds like a frickin', you know, eulogy because it just goes on and on and on. And I'm still here. But the reason that stuff's in there, whether it's writing books or, you know, doing all these years on radio and doing TED Talks, and all the stuff that supposedly makes you somebody in the outer world, all that starts in the inner world. And the inner world for me has been one of discipline and responsibility. That's kind of it, basically. I mean, there's more facets to it, but those are the two main drivers, discipline and responsibility. And I received most of my lessons in discipline and responsibility playing football. Last weekend, I got a chance to get together with a few of the guys that I played college football with at Northeastern Illinois University. And the last time I saw a lot of these guys was 42 years ago, some 44 years ago. And some of them I see quite often, but it's like a mixed bag. And one of the subscribers of the podcast, my dear friend Laura, she was the manager on the football team for 77, 78, 79, somewhere, not 77, 78, 79, and 80 in there. I was there from 77 to 79. She came a year after I started there, and she was our manager. I believe she was a cheerleader, and that didn't last long, because if you know Laura, that ain't going to last too long. She had to get the dirt under her nails, and so she became an integral part of the team. And that's doing all the shit work. You know, the equipment and dragging bags out and making sure we have what we need and all the kind of stuff a manager does. So she and our kicker, Patrick, from back in the day, they put together a reunion about, I think it was 3 years ago now, 2018, 2019, somewhere in there. And we got to see about 30 guys, you know, that we had not seen for a very long time. And it's interesting because not so much this past weekend, but when we had the bigger reunion, we were like in a little room at a hotel. And as soon as you walked in, the guys kind of gradually, you know, floated towards their natural positions, meaning all the defensive guys like me stuck together and all the offensive guys kind of huddled up over there. At one point, it was really comical because we're sitting there and we looked and like, this is like a team meeting. All you guys are over there. And we hadn't seen each other for decades. So this past weekend, last Sunday, was a much smaller gathering at a bar, which, you know, I can't be a bad thing, right? Nothing bad can come out of that. And it was just a joy for me to reconnect. And there's something about being on a team sport that if you haven't played a team sport, you don't get it. It's like people tell me all the time, if you're not a musician and you've never been in a band, you just don't get it. The camaraderie, the connection, you know, and all that goes along with it. And it's what binds you to people decades later. And there's all kind of things that can happen, you know, whether it's clubs or what have you. But in my particular case, it was football. And to see these guys, you know, I see them all as I think they still looked back in the day. Of course, none of us do. You know, we're all in our 60s, for sure. And when we played, you know, we were in our teens and 20s. So, but to see the faces, you know, the faces don't change to me. Our bodies have definitely changed. But the faces don't change. And I look at Laura and she looks the same to me as she did, you know, in 1979. I mean, it doesn't change for me. And my buddy Tim, he and I were co-captains at Schurz High School together in 1977. We remain close friends to this day. He is still a music teacher at Schurz where we went to school. And when I see him, it's like he's picking me up on Saturday morning in his Pinto for a football game, right? And then some of the other guys that show up, but you know, Jimmy D, Jimmy Ladd, and Johnny Mann. I'm shortening their names because unless I have permission, I'm not using last names. But Jimmy D, Jimmy Ladd, and Johnny Mann sounds like part of the cast of The Sopranos or something, right? These guys are all characters in their own right. Billy showed up, Father Bill, big offensive tackle we had. I finally got a chance to ask this guy who I think he was on the other side of the line for me. So when you're in practice, of course, you're banging heads with these guys constantly for, you know, two or three seasons. And Billy's a, you know, 6'3 and a half, 6'4, 255, 260 pound guy. And we called him Father Bill, like he was a priest or something. And I never knew why that was. And so I finally got a chance to ask Father Bill. I said, Billy, how did that happen? And it was at a football banquet at the end of the year that one of our running backs said it in passing or something, and it stuck. And he was a copper in Chicago for well over 20 years. I don't think they called him Father Bill. But the time with these folks rejuvenates me. It reinvigorates me. It jacks up my shorts in my terminology. You know, when Jimmy D comes over, one of the best linemen, defensive linemen I'd ever seen play football, and brings over, you know, six or eight Budweisers in an ice bucket, I'm good to go for a little while. You know what I'm saying? So in all of that, I started to, and of course, they start coming to me. So you can write? Yeah, I can write. I didn't know you could read. So, you know, we go back and forth. But there were, you know, there's a couple of guys who were like, how the hell is this knuckle-dragging SOB who used to just want to knock the piss out of people on the football field become the guy that you are? You've done all these things. And part of me doesn't know. Part of me says I'm not supposed to know. And another part of me says that I've done the work on myself and the inner work, and then the outer work takes care of itself. And when you take care of that inside stuff, it's amazing how the outer changes. As within, so without. If you go within, you'll never go without. I've learned that a long time ago. But it's not easy. I mean, it's not been a cakewalk, that's for sure. But they were, you know, kind of mesmerized by the transformation. And so we got in some interesting conversations, and I and all of them are successful in their own right. Johnny Mann, he and I taught together at Shearer's way back in the day in the early 90s. I don't know how long he was a Chicago fireman, 30 plus years, 35, I don't know. And rock solid guy. And, you know, Jimmy Ladd worked at a major corporation for 30 plus years, provided well for his family, just top notch guy. Laura, as I mentioned, has this Dreams of Hope's Ranch where she works with kids with different abilities and helps them get in the direction they need to go. And, you know, you just don't pull that stuff out of your ass. My buddy Tim, as I mentioned, you know, all these years is the music director at Church High School. And we've all found our niche. We've all found out where we fit. But it goes back to the discipline and the responsibility on the field and off the field. Look, none of us played what we say, quote, major college football. None of us were big enough, fast enough, or probably smart enough to go to any major university, University of Chicago, University of Illinois, University of Michigan, all that stuff. But we did have a chance to play Division II college football. And that's saying something. A lot of guys never get that chance. So we all came from these sort of varying backgrounds. We all came together. And in 1977, actually, we were the Division II NAIA, which I don't know what the hell that stands for anymore. And we were the division, we were the champions that year. And that was my first year out of high school. So to come from high school, which you're the top dog, you know, Tim and I were the top dogs, man. And to go to a football team like in college and realize that you're not top dog anymore, you're just a dog. Because they're all top dogs. These are all guys that came from really good schools that were really coached well, that were really good athletes. And that's how you go up the ladder. I think of the guys that played high school football and never played again, and that's kind of a level that gets cut off. And then guys like Tim and I went up to the next level, and there we met like Peter and like I said, Johnny and Teddy and Eddie and the rest of these guys and Tony and Bemis and a whole cast and crew of characters that were right out of North Dallas 40 or the longest yard. You take your pick. I don't remember the games as much as I remember the road trips, go figure, and the antics. And the things that I, you know, you grow up real quick. Tim and I will never forget this. I can kind of clean up my language for this one. It was our first road game. And Tim and I, as I mentioned, we're playing at Northeastern. And we're pretty close buds, right? So we're captains together that year in 1977. And we go through practice and, you know, obviously we realize you got to up your game and we're freshmen. So how much are we going to play? I think I was able to play more than Tim was at that point, only because I was on defense, which needed more help than the offense. And they already had a couple of great running backs. And Timmy the Tank's, you know, fullback and blocking back. And so, I mean, he worked his way in too. But we're going on this road trip. And as I believe we showed up, the buses in the parking lot were kind of dressed nice. You know, the coach said, guys, you got to wear ties, you know. I don't know if we actually had ties on, but I remember it that way. And we come walking up the side of the bus, you know, with our bags, and we're ready to go on our first college football road trip. And Tim and I, you know, when I had it combed, and he still has hair, and he looked good. And we're walking up to the bus, and we get on the bus, and it's Animal House, basically, to a greater or lesser degree. Mike D is sitting over on a bus seat with a hat on, his eyes half open. Strumming a guitar that's missing a string, singing Harry Chapin songs. Right next to him is Jimmy Ladd doing the same thing. And at every corner of the bus, there was like something going on. And these guys were all upperclassmen. So here we come walking out, you know, looking like fresh as daisies. And we're like, what the hell is this? And at one point, we're sitting there waiting for the bus to leave. And Bemis, who was another guy that's I can't even explain what a freak of nature this guy was. He played nose man on our 34 defense. Played a 3-4 defense, which means there's three down linemen and four linebackers. And sometimes those linebackers come up to the line, so you know, depending on the defense it's called. So I played right defensive end. Bemis was in the middle, and Jimmy D was the left defensive end. And this guy was 5'9 on a good day, maybe 5'10, weighed about 180 pounds. He was the quickest guy I'd ever seen in my life. He was quick as a cat to get into the backfield. There was no way that you could put a block on this guy. Now, you're playing against guys that are 250, 260, 270 pounds at that point. He still wreaked havoc. So anyway, Bemis comes walking up the side of the bus, and he's got a turban on his head, a black turban with a crystal in the middle and a little like bowling bag or something. And he's got a woman escorting him on each arm, a lady on each arm escorting him to the bus. And Tim and I are like, what is this? They walk him up to the bus. They bid him adieu. He gets on the bus and he walks down. You know, now, again, we've been practicing all together, but you don't talk to a guy like that very much. I mean, he's the institution. So I got nothing except my jaw is hanging open. And he comes walking by and sits a seat or two up in front of us. And before we're out of the parking lot, he opens up this bag. And then he has another little bag next to it. And it's all sort of libations and liquor in the parking lot. And he says, gentlemen, the bar is open. We're not even on the road yet. So that's just a little slice of how some of the road games went and some of the experiences we had. The rest of them I can't tell you about. But only in the fact that the context of him is so, you know, I couldn't explain it in a way that fit the times. Suffice to say that it was different than it is now. And the education that I had, not only on the field of having to become a better football player, but also off the field to figure out what the hell was going on here, was formidable. When we were at the reunion last weekend, I started asking the guys, how did football, if at all, apply in your, quote, civilian life? You know, all these guys played, like I said, you know, some sort of form of park football and for sure high school football. Some of these guys were, you know, all state football players. And then they played college level. That's a lot of football. And each one of them said it was critically important in some way, shape, or form that somehow they were able to lean back on the lessons that football taught them and gave us when they no longer put on a football helmet. And the two or three things that came up every single time, discipline, responsibility, and obligation. You can build your life, a good life, on discipline, responsibility, and obligation. And when the further I dug, I didn't want to feel like these guys to feel like I was interviewing them, but I was interviewing them, and I really wasn't planning actually right away to put that into a podcast. But I'm just naturally curious. I mean, I know what football did for me outside of broke my fingers, my knees hurt. When it rains, I can tell 24 to 48 hours ahead of time better than any meteorologist. My neck feels like there's marbles in there most of the time, And there's, that's the price of the game. On a much more serious note, I'm sure that I've had a dozen concussions or so probably over that time. The helmets were different. The game was a little bit different. The practice for sure was different. How we tackled was different. And I remember having a conversation with my high school coach, head coach, Prio, about that. And, it's like if we knew, nobody knew. And then when they started changing the equipment and stuff. I mean, we were playing with helmets called suspension helmets, right? So the helmet was the shell, and inside the shell, there was no padding per se, but the suspension helmet was to keep the helmet off your head. So if you got hit, there was like a room in there for the blow to be absorbed. They called suspension helmets. And then later on, we had water helmets, we had air helmets. By the time I played college ball, it was probably water and air helmets, and we could literally had water packs. I don't know if it was really water in there, but it was water packs to cushion the blow. And then they had these air helmets that had like a plumping up a bike tire. They had little ports on the top and the back of the helmet. And you go up to a coach and it stick a needle in, like inflating a football. and you put more air into a helmet. So how much that did or didn't do, I don't know. But you can't take a couple of guys, well over 200 pounds, run full speed at each other in what we call the kiss drill, where you're going face to face, full force, bam, and not come away thinking that there's little birdies flying around that aren't really there. So in all of that, that's kind of the price that the game exacted from me. And at this point in my life, even though there is a lot of problem, and I've seen some guys that I know having problems with physical problems from the game, there's a trade-off in everything in life. And so far for me, the trade-off's been okay. You know, I've had knee surgeries and I have other surgeries and stuff, but somehow that was the price that needed to be paid to exact the lessons that the game gave me. And interestingly enough, most of it was not during the games themselves. It was during practice. Because in practice, it's repetition over and over and over again. If you go back to high school and, you know, we would run, I don't know how many plays. In high school, I played tight end. And I also played defensive end, so I kind of played both ways, which was exhausting, but what the hell? I'm 18 years old. I can do it. But you run plays over and over again to get them as close to perfect as possible. And inevitably, somebody screws up, jumps offside, makes, you know, whatever. But you do things over and over and over and over and over and over. I can't even tell you, over and over and over again. And the idea is to refine the process. That is not unlike my business life, where I can't tell you how many times I've run the same procedure over and over and over again in audio to get the desired effect that I'm looking for or listening for a client or for myself. And the same thing holds true for college, just at a different level, bigger guys, faster game, have to up your game. When I went from radio in Michigan in 1997, where I started, and when I left there and went to Oprah Radio, Harpo, in 2006, I had to up my game. All of a sudden, it was the best people, once again, from different parts of the country, different schools, for example, but even though it was radio, and they picked the best of the best that they could find to create a team that would win more than it lost. And so pretty soon I went from kind of being my, you know, my one band guy. I had a producer, Anne Marie, who was fantastic, but really it was just one or two of us that were doing the heavy lifting. And all of a sudden, I was part of a team. I was not the team. I was part of a team. Had to find my place. Had to find my space. Had to figure things out. Had to step up my game. Had to do things over and over again to get a good result. Have that repetition. So you can see the parallels. And I was thinking about, as I'm doing this podcast, that I guess that 99% of you listening never played football in college, never played it in high school, never maybe played football ever, may not like football. This is not about football, this podcast. I mean, it is, but it isn't. What it is about is responsibility and discipline and obligation. And every time I went and talked to those guys and said, they all said the same thing without me knowing, you know, or without them knowing that I was talking to somebody else about it. And when you get that kind of answer from the same question from different people, you're kind of onto something. And so as I was getting ready to do this show, I thought to myself, you know, how do I kind of present this in a way that doesn't have people that don't like football or don't understand or don't want to hear, you know, turn it off in the first 12 minutes. I don't know if I've succeeded in that, but I will tell you that obligation to the duty at hand, to whatever it is that you've chosen and I believe has chosen you. You know, there are accidents and incidents. Maturity is what determines the difference. If you're someone who feels like you have zero control in your life over anything, then your life might look like an accident to you. I don't know how this stuff happens, it just does. But if you're someone who has grown over time to realize you are a participant on some level in the choices you make and the chances you take, then those accidents become incidents. They are different. Accidents means you're a victim of something. You're at the mercy of something, that something happened that shouldn't have happened. Incidents is you're participating in the process. This is something to be learned from. And football was like that for me. I can't tell you how many times I got knocked on my ass. Remember, matter of fact, I can tell you, one of our guys, Billy P, who didn't make the reunion, found a game film from 1977. We were playing Milton College. Milton College does not exist anymore. I think it's a cornfield at this point, but back then it was a viable university. And they had a quarterback there at Milton named Dave Craig. Dave Craig was the seventh string quarterback at one point. So when we went to Milton College, we played against this team that was, it was okay. And they had this quarterback who was pretty good, not a big guy, but had a pretty good arm. And we knew going in that he wasn't their starting quarterback. I can use Dave's full name because he's a well-known commodity and the rest of these guys are not. But I'm watching this game film from 1977. We're playing the aforementioned Milton College with the aforementioned Dave Craig. And we lost that first game to them. But there was probably, 20 plays where I just got hit like a steamroller ran me over. I could see, and there's no sound, and it's a little grainy, and it's old. But there were times when number 75, I just got ground into the turf. Conversely, there was probably a dozen plays or so where number 75 did pretty well. Matter of fact, knocked Dave Craig right out of his keister a couple times with a couple other guys. And so you look at the balance of that, and I had not seen that game. If we had it reviewed after, the game itself back in 77, I don't recall that. So to watch this 44 years later, no wonder my hands hurt. No wonder my neck hurts. It was pretty fast for the time, and it was pretty intense. But here's the deal. After every time I got knocked down, my obligation was to get back up. No matter what, there's another play coming, like in seconds. So as bad as I may have looked on one play, or as good as I looked on the next play, didn't matter. What mattered is you went again, and again, and again, and again, until the game is over, until the next game, until the next practice. You repeat that thousands of times over your experience of life, and pretty soon it becomes a habit. So in business, in radio for sure, there's been times where, I knew I was the guy to play. Just like I was in football. My first year, even though I was in that film quite a bit, there were other games where I didn't play at all as a freshman. And I knew I should be playing, and God damn it, I should be in there. No different than radio. When I was at WGN for 2 years, I was in rotation. I was a bench guy. And here in Chicago, WGN is a thing. It's the 50,000-watt blowtorch, has a historical stance and presence in the media business across the country. So to be part of the team at all was a huge thrill for me. I grew up listening to the station. And I started on overnights. I'd gone from Oprah Radio at the top of the, much like high school, to a different thing, right? I was at the top of the heap in radio at Harpo. When that ended and I went through some challenges and changes in my life, I ended up at WGN. I had to go back to overnights. It sucked. Didn't last long, but it still sucked. Tried talking from 11 at night till 5 o'clock in the morning. So I get over to WGN, and while I was honored to be there and proud to be there, the way the lineup was set was I knew that at some point, I'm expendable. But I knew that going in. And so when I had the opportunity to be on the air with guys like John Williams, who's still on the radio at WGN, the legendary Gary Meyer, the G-Man, who was there. When I had a chance to sit in for those guys, I made the most of it. Even though I knew there's a chance I'm going to get cut. But I'm playing because the obligation's there and the responsibility's there and the discipline is there, no matter whether I'm on the next day or not. So there's a direct line straight back to football for me. And all these guys that I talked to, their careers were built on the same thing. Repeating things over and over again, you really don't want to do. Do I want to run this play again? Hell no. Do I want to run this blocking drill again? Hell no. But you push and you push and you push and you push and you do it anyway. And pretty soon you start to realize, at least I did, that it's less about me and more about we. Because if it's just about me, well, then I should be this and I should be that. Well, that's not what team sports are about. And I still see life in so many different ways. I'm on a lot of different teams. When I'm working in my audio business, in my production business, my team consists of my clients and customers and the people also that I hire for different parts of the project. We're all a team. And my job is to hopefully make those players, for lack of a better term, come together and play their best for a great result. And 9 times out of 10, that's exactly what happens. And that's a direct result to practice over and over again. Discipline, responsibility, and obligation. And when I think of a larger context, you know, just being with those guys last week and Laura, that's a real team that I was part of. And we're still connected. It's like we were on the bus the day before. 44 years later. Pretty amazing. Tomorrow, Sunday, I will be hanging out with guys from yet another team. I mean, I took it to the limit. I used all whatever I had to do to play football, I kept doing it. When I got out of the service in 86, I started playing semi-pro football, which is basically semi-pro football. Let's call it what it is. But there are guys from the NFL there. There are guys wanting to go to the NFL there. Then there's guys like me that just want to beat the hell out of somebody because we feel like we're supposed to still play football. And that was a whole nother experience of more guys that were really, really good. They came from different backgrounds with, as I mentioned, all these different aspirations, going to the NFL, coming out of the NFL, getting it out of our system. I'll be with them tomorrow. And it's the same thing. Obligation, discipline, responsibility. So as we keep coming together back and forth over these decades, those are the lessons that I've extracted. And those are lessons and principles that can be used by anybody, whether you've ever played a sport or not. The word responsibility, especially to me, is very, very interesting. Because if you turn it inside out and flip it, it's the ability to respond. If I apply it to my football life, what was the ability I had to respond to getting knocked on my ass? Getting back up? That's one of them. Staying down? That's one. So the decision to get back up again wasn't even a decision. It was an automatic response. There was one thing I can't remember. Gosh, I don't remember the name of all the drills we did. One was called monkey rolls, which was, I don't know who came up with this one, but you get three guys standing up, full equipment. And the whole idea is to roll in formation. Let's put it that way. A guy in the middle rolls to the right on the ground. The guy on the right rolls over him. The guy on the left jumps over the guy in the middle. And you do this until they blow the whistle. And you roll and roll and roll. And what it trains you to do, at least trained me to do, is to be up, then been down. I mean, up and down. Just like life. Up and down. Up and down. Up and down. Up and down. Now, I haven't done a monkey roll since Gerald Ford was president. I'm not planning on doing any monkey rolls. But philosophically, in my mind, I'm doing monkey rolls all the time. You never know what's coming your way. You got to get up. You got to get down. You get up and down. Up and down. Up and down. And it has prepared me to be ready for that stuff. So the ability to respond to the challenges and changes of life, the ones that you participated in and the ones you have no control over, that's determined solely by you. The obligation part, that's a choice and a decision that you have to make on a day-to-day basis, in my opinion. What's my obligation to a certain thing, a certain calling, a certain effort? You know, I get up really early in the morning. I like morning better than any time of the day, mostly because it's quiet, nobody else is doing anything, and I can work and be focused. And it's become such a habit that my obligation isn't even a question anymore. I'm obligated to my work because I've been given this to do. And I just today, or actually it was yesterday, I put up posts now and again on Facebook. In the landfill of Facebook where there's more shit than shine. But I try to add things to it that offset all the crap that's in the world. And I came across, this is one of my favorite quotes. And it's not by Vince Lombardi or Mike Ditka or any football guy. It's by Irma Bombeck, one of my favorite writers. And the quote is this: when I stand before God at the end of my life, I would hope that I would not have a single bit of talent left. And I could say, I used everything you gave me. Wow. And I read that many, many years ago, and when I kind of forget what I'm doing and where I'm going or things get busy, I go back to that and realize I've been given a lot, and too much is given, much is expected. And so have you. Think about it. Think about what you're doing and where you're at, how you're doing it, and all those type of things. And while it may be a shit show sometimes, it's your shit show. So own it. Bless the mess, because when you bless the mess, good things can come out of it. You may not know for decades why, and that's okay. Not every return on investment is immediate. When I was mentioning a little bit earlier about getting this email from a reader about the book Phenomenon and what was prompting in her, I wrote that book, and it's been writing itself for decades, and it didn't get printed until 2020. So we're going into 2022. So it's almost 2 years old, and to her, it's brand new. To me, it's 2 years old. I'm already on to the next thing. But my obligation to get it done was paramount. It's got to be done. That's my obligation. So you have obligation, you have responsibility, and I think the pivot point in life is discipline. Discipline, discipline, discipline. Be a disciple of discipline. And if you do that, which is really closely tied to work ethic, I mean, you never know what's going to come your way and you'll be able to handle it. And discipline is an inside thing. I don't know that it's something you can just get from the outside. It's a repetition. It's concentrated effort over time. It's giving you, you know, too many people, I think, have their backbone and their wishbones confused. Wishbone is like, well, I hope things turn out okay. Well, that's good. Backbone is where the discipline resides. Discipline resides in the backbone, not the wishbone. There's a place for the wishbone, but it's not in the same place as the backbone. They're very different. And so when you start to cultivate a habit of discipline, the responsibility that you have to the work that you do, to the space that you take up on the planet at this particular time, and you have the obligation, you feel that obligation to follow through on that, it's success is what follows. You don't chase success. It catches up to you after repeated effort over time. In football, you run plays over and over and over again, waiting to score points. And if you do everything right and you score points and you have more points than your opponent, you win the game. But then it starts all over again. It is not permanent. Winning and losing are fluid. I always get a kick out of the all the years I played football, I'm pretty well qualified to watch football and go, are you kidding me? I asked some of the guys that too. I said, do you have a hard time watching football? Like, yeah, because we already know the defense at a time, what the offense is going to do. Even though the game's changed a little bit, you're so trained to see the game through the eyes of an athlete, of a player, of one who participated, which is different than the guy in the sideline wearing the weird thing on his head in the stands with beer all over him with the big rubber finger going, we're number one, because that's all he's got going. Just saying it the way I see it. So my point in doing this podcast was really twofold. One was to acknowledge what the game and the players and the coaches have given to me that have helped my success. The discipline to get to this studio every day. The discipline some days to not come here. The obligation I know that I've been charged with to, as Irma said, to use everything I've been given. So when I'm done, I'm done. Use it up. And then the responsibility and the ability to respond to the challenges and changes and the choices and the chances of life. This is not easy stuff, kids. It's simple. There's a difference. Just because something is simple doesn't make it easy. I wouldn't want it easy. How do you grow in strength if everything comes to you easy? You know, I'm a huge proponent of weight training and resistance training. I've been doing it since I was 14, 15. Ever since I saw Arnold Schwarzenegger in Pumping Iron, I would spit with it. My grandfather, Carl, from Sweden, was I don't think he was a bodybuilder, but he just had that physique and he made his own weights and his own exercise equipment. And I've been at it my whole life for the most part. And it has given me, a machine, for lack of a better term, that I'm pretty good with and is in pretty good shape for my age. And I go to the gym in the morning and I see guys my age that are just starting. And I thought, holy shit, that's a long road ahead, but it's better than not doing anything. But the discipline of working out has shown me and taught me that you have to push against heavier things to grow strong. And life is about pushing against heavier things to grow strong. If you don't, you don't. That's the bottom line. So that was the first part, to acknowledge all that. The second part was, I had a hell of a lot of fun. I'm watching this game film the other day. I don't remember being that fast, that quick. It's just like it's a blur. And I was talking to my friend Jerry Kramer a couple days ago, the great legendary Hall of Fame Green Bay Packer guard. We've been friends for well over 30 years, and we were talking about this, and I was sharing a lot of this here, and he goes, same lessons I learned with the Packers, John. It's the same thing. It's all just different levels. Discipline, obligation, and responsibility. You just keep repeating the same thing over and over again and keep pushing against the heavier weights, and you will grow stronger. And you never know where you're going to need that strength. You never know where you're going to need that strength. Sometimes when you least expect it, discipline, responsibility, and obligation are the best three tools you have in your toolbox to deal with the ups and downs of life. So with all of that, I've chewed your ear off for about 20 minutes longer than I wanted to, but hey, it's my show. Give me a break. Until next time, safe travels. Thanks for listening. Adios.